Our focus today is the God who rejoices in the truth, or rejoices with the truth, or to use the full phrase from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the God who does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. And of course, the moment you use truth, then you have to stop and think about what we mean. What do we mean by truth? Because there are all sorts of truth. There's the sort of truth. Is anybody here a scientist? Scientist, put your hand. Yeah, we got one or two. Okay, well, there's that sense of scientific truth. There's the truth of the test lab, you know, where truth has to be verifiable, otherwise you don't respect it. Is anybody here a lawyer? Come on, you can admit. Yeah, one or two, yeah. So that's a different kind of truth, the sort of truth of the law court, where you've got to assess whether someone's telling the truth, and you do it by precedent, but you also do it by thinking, is what they're saying likely, or is it reasonable? So that's sort of reasonable truth. And then there's the truth of everyday life. You know, like, I'm talking about those everyday encounters that we all have, when someone asks us, so what do you think of the scones? Or my granddaughter gives me a painting she's done just for me, and she wants to know what I think of it. I think that's a different kind of truth. It's what matters with that kind of truth, not whether it's verifiable or whether it's reasonable even. It's more whether it's helpful or whether it's loving. So that's another kind of truth. I describe all these sorts of truth. In my mind, they're sort of external truth. They're to do with how we relate to people or how we react to the world. But I think there's also another kind of truth, which I'd call internal truth. And it's to do with being consistent or being authentic, being true to yourself, true to who you are, true to what you believe. I think the God who does not delight in evil but rejoices with the truth, it's that sort of truth he's talking about. And I think it's really important that we remember that the phrase rejoices with the truth, because it's that sort of internal truth that is the source of joy, that brings joy. Anyway, we're going to see both internal and internal truth and evidence, external and internal truth and evidence in today's passage, but I'm going to ask Derek and Susan Jarn to read this passage for us. It's in John's Gospel, chapter 18. And if you want to follow in the church Bibles, it's on page number 1087. But as they come up, I'm just going to explain why I've asked both of them to read this passage. If you just come up and use the lectern, it's because it's quite a long passage, but actually boils down to two rather disjointed conversations that Pilate has. One is... It's a public conversation. It happens outside the doors of his palace. And the other is a conversation that's more private, that happens inside his palace. And I love the fact that one is sort of external. If you think of what I've just been saying about truth, one is sort of external and the other is internal. The one he has outside the door of his palace is a public thing. Everybody's listening and he's having this conversation with the religious leaders. But the one he has inside is more one-to-one, and he has it with Jesus. And they're very different conversations, and the mood of the conversations in both cases very, very different. But anyway, let's hand over to Derek and Susan. If you just take us through these passages.
Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now, it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If he were not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die.
Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked, "or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now, my kingdom is from another place." "You're a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into this world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate.
With this, he went out again to the Jews gathered there and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him. But it's your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the King of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they slapped him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jewish leaders insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God."
When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. And he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus. But Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have the power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin."
From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation for the Passover. It was about noon. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away! Take him away! Crucify him!" "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priests answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus.
Thank you, Susan and Derek. Let's take a look at those two conversations. The first one, the public one, with the religious leaders. outside the front door of the palace, the external one, if you like. And I want us to try and imagine the contact. Imagine you're Pilate. Like, he's just been woken up in the middle of the night. Hands up if you like being woken up in the middle of the night. Just hands up if you don't like being woken up in the middle. Yeah, quite a few of you. So you're beginning to find your way into Pilate's shoes now. He's been woken up in the middle of the night. There's something urgent, apparently, that he has to deal with. And normally, if something like that happens, he'd just throw a robe around him and say, okay, bring him in. Let's talk about this. But in this case, they won't come in because they have these stupid purity laws, which says that if they come into his home, the governor, his home, they'll be unclean because he's unclean because he's a Gentile. Bring me my clothes, he says. So he gets dressed in the middle of the night, and he has to go out to see them. So you can imagine, he's not in the best of moods by the time he gets out there. But he still seems to be trying his best. Verse 29, what charges are you bringing against this man, he asks. So he's still interested in the truth. They don't seem to be interested in the truth. If he were not a criminal, they replied, we would not have handed him over to you. In other words, are you questioning our ability to judge whether this man has broken our law or not? Do you think you're more of an expert than we are? Okay, then, he says, okay, it's your problem. You go and judge. No, they say, no, because we don't have the power to execute him. It's your problem. And to me, it's as if their minds are already made up, because to them, the truth is obvious. And the truth is that Jesus is a threat to the establishment, and so therefore he has to die. But of course, the irony of the situation is they're meant to hold their own laws as sacred. And here they are breaking them in order to get their way. They are willing to tell lie after lie after lie, to break their sacred laws again and again and again. And they don't seem to care. And it's Pilate, it's the Gentile, it's the pagan who is trying to find out what the truth is, who's trying to stick to the law. I still can find no charge against him, he says. And then he tries to put the whole thing into perspective. He said, it's, you know, this whole thing with Barabbas, if this is Pilate's attempt to contrast Jesus with a murderer, he's sort of saying, surely he's not as bad as Barabbas. No, he's worse, they say. No, set Barabbas free. We don't care that he's murdered people. Set him free. We want Jesus to die. Pilate tries again. He has Jesus whipped and mocked and humiliated and hauled out again, quivering. And he sort of says, surely he's no threat to you now. Come on. Surely he's no threat to you now. No, he's broken our sacred laws. He claims he's the Son of God. And of course, there's a double irony here. Not only are they saying that Jesus has broken their laws as they break their laws to condemn Jesus, but also all their lives they have preached the Messiah. All their lives they've preached that the Messiah is going to come. The Messiah comes. The reason they refuse to recognize him is because he doesn't fit their mold of who they think a Messiah should be. It's because he's a threat to their authority, and they're not going to let go of that. And in the end, and this is for me is the most striking thing, they're even happy to betray their own Jewish faith. Those final words, shall I crucify your king? Pilate asked. We have no king but Caesar, they replied. To an ordinary Jew, to an ordinary God-fearing Jew, an ordinary God-fearing Jew would never say that he has no king but Caesar. That is blasphemy. If you say that in public, you deserve to die. And here they are, they're saying it in public so that they can get Jesus. It's just amazing. Where is truth? Of course, it's so easy for us to look on and laugh at their hypocrisy, isn't it? So easy. because we live in an age where truth is highly valued, isn't it? I mean, nobody distorts the truth these days, do they? Do they? Nobody, no. I'm afraid that's not the case if you listen to the news. The truth is, and there's that word again, that we live in an age where everybody seems ready and able to believe anything so long as it supports their own self-interests. And so we have fake news, and we have insidious social media campaigns, and we have people contradicting each other, and we have people making false accusations against each other, just making things up. And what I find most worrying of all is it seems to work. It really does seem to work. And why does it work? Because we let it. Because we let it. So it's the same today as it was in Jesus' day. When we choose to believe what we want to believe because it serves our interests, then truth always comes a poor second. And when that happens, the first casualty is justice. And also something else that you probably notice, when that happens, the joy goes. It really does go. It does not last. Let's move on to that second conversation, the one that took place inside the palace, the interior conversation between Pilate and Jesus. As I said, the moods of the two conversations are quite striking. On the external one, the public one with the religious leaders, it's like Pilate's desperately trying to be just and desperately trying to be patient, and gradually his resolve is ground down. But the one inside, the one with Jesus, he starts off very confident, and he ends up quite uncertain and fearful. He begins by being in control. Are you the king of the Jews? My kingdom is not of this world, says Jesus. In other words, what you're suggesting doesn't actually apply. Oh, so you are a king then? And Jesus moves the conversation on to another level. You're right in saying I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. And now Pilate's on the back foot, and he comes out with that famous line, what is truth? And later on, he tries again to take the initiative. Verse 10 of chapter 19. Don't you realize I have the power either to free you or to crucify you? You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. It's no use, Pilate. You're in a turmoil. You're caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. You don't know what to do. Deep inside, Pilate knows the truth. He knows that he's been asked to condemn not just an innocent man, but someone really, really, really special. Someone who has a godlike authority. He knows there's something really badly wrong here, and he has a choice to make. And we know from other gospel accounts that his wife has a dream about this and tries to warn him. There's nothing wrong with this man. He's innocent. But Pilate also knows that the Jewish leaders are not going to give up. He knows that they're happy even to sell their own souls, and they're certainly going to take him down with them if they go. And in the end, it's his pragmatism and his self-interest. All these things seem to win out, and he hands Jesus over. And I'm sure he would have, in his mind, he was saying, oh, well, I had to appease the Jewish, I had to keep the peace. Oh, there's my reputation to think. I don't want a black mark against my name. There's all these things buzzing around in his head. But in the end, it's self-interest that wins out. And of course, the challenge for us. And this is why the Word of God is such a powerful thing. The challenge for us all today is, if we had been Pilate, would we have done any different? Let's just take a few final moments focusing on Jesus. Because Jesus was no stranger to truth. John chapter 1, verse 14. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth. John chapter 8, verse 32. If you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. John chapter 14, verse 6. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. John chapter 17, verse 17. Father, sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. See, to Jesus, truth is not something external to where you are or who you are. It's not something to apply when circumstances demand it or when it suits and then disregard when it doesn't suit. That's not what truth is. To Jesus, truth is an internal thing. It's to do with who he is. It's to do with his very nature, and it sort of works its way out from the inside out and affects absolutely everything he does. That's truth. You see, truth, which the real truth, is first and foremost an internal thing. It's, for us, it's a spiritual thing. It's a reflection of the God of truth who is within us. To deny its voice is to deny God's voice. It's to delude ourselves. To accept that voice is to live lives that are truly authentic. It's to live a life like Jesus lived. And it's to live a life that's full of rejoicing. To me, that's always the thing to look for. Along with truth comes rejoicing. It may not be sort of external happiness that comes and goes, but deep, deep joy, knowing that you and God are one in this thing. That's always the evidence I look for. And the opposite also holds. I mean, did Pilate go back home rejoicing that day? Did the chief priests sleep at peace that night? I don't think so. True rejoicing comes from an inner peace, and inner peace comes from being true to who you are and who you believe in, whatever the cost. So we have to ask ourselves, who am I? Who are we? I know, I believe that I am a sinner who is loved by God and who died for me. I know that. I know that I'm called to follow Jesus wherever he leads me. And I know that I'm called to be an ambassador for his kingdom, just as he came into the world bringing grace and truth. So I am called to go into the world bringing grace and truth. And I know that only in doing that will I know joy, deep joy in my life, a joy that lasts. And it might be good for us all now just to take a few moments in silence. Here are some words from Jesus in John chapter 8, verse 37. If the truth shall set you free, you shall be free indeed. And a question for us all to just think about. Are we rejoicing in truth today? And are we letting that show in the way we live our lives? God of grace and truth, as you are present here with us now, be present within us. Sort out all the stuff that needs sorting out. Set us free to rejoice. Help us to show it in the way we live our lives. That the world might know that Jesus is the Savior, that he is the Messiah. And we ask this for his sake. Amen.